How are you all doing today? Good? Well, that makes my life easier then. I thought you were going to say miserable, Swami Nuhan, sir. Awful, Swami Nuhan, sir. Please help us. But you're saying, oh, we're good. We're fine. I don't know why you invited us to come here. Where's that smile on your face? Don't put it in your pocket. Take it out. Put it on. It's a priceless gift that we can give everyone, isn't it? It's amazing what a smile, little smile can do. Sometimes you just have to force yourself. Force a smile on yourself and your whole day can change just as a result of that. A smile begets a smile. It does. Shall I prove it to you? See? Don't you have special people in your life who, even when things are going really bad, you know, when life is just getting at them from every angle, they'll still hold that smile strong. They'll still keep a smile on their face, and you wonder how they manage to do that. And then when you see people like that, does that not inspire you just to keep going? Does that not give you hope that, you know, if I just hang in there, just for another minute, just for another day, things will be better? These are gifts of mankind. We must embrace people like that. They're the people who make our lives better, who make it seem like those difficult days will just pass away and good times will come. I want you all to smile genuinely. Not just force a smile on your face, but actually smile genuinely. Because your face is a mirror to your heart. And if you can always wear a smile on your face, and then no matter what your circumstances are, but that smile should be a reflection of how you feel internally. And that is what the Dhamma can help you do. There are far too many miserable people in this world, right? The world doesn't need another one. Enough and more miserable people in this world, they need someone to teach them how to smile. So a smile is golden. Wear it. You look better with it. It's the best makeup. You spend hours doing your makeup. I spend hours doing my makeup. But nothing beats a smile. If you go to a cosmetics shop, sometimes it could cost you a fortune, right, to buy some of the cosmetics these days, the best brands, right, what's good for your skin and all that good stuff. But you know what's good for the soul? Your lipstick that can be good for your lips, the foundation powder that can be good for your face, right? Your mascara can be good for your eyelashes, I don't know. I read these off a book. But you know what's good for the soul? A smile. Keep it on you at all times. It might just be the pick-me-up someone else needs. You know, you can wear a smile out of compassion. You can wear a smile out of compassion. Yeah, facially, whatever you do, you know, that's one thing. But what goes on inside, that is your Nibbana, isn't it? What if you can always wear a smile, even when things are going south, things are getting really tough and difficult, at home, at the workplace, right, among friends? If you can wear a smile on your face, and then people who feel like, you know, things are just really tough on them, and they come to you and they come and ask you, how come you got a smile when all things are, you know, things are going going so bad? How come you got a smile on your face? Then you can share with them your secret. It's a miracle. It really is. What the Dhamma can help you do is wear that smile regardless of what's going on around you. Regardless. If this whole building were to collapse, I can still have my smile on my face. At least whatever is left of me will still be smiling. On my deathbed, I want to look like this. Honestly. That's how I want people to remember how I've lived my life and what I've achieved out of living for however many years I will have lived by then. But then to have this when you're gone, you have to have worked on getting it while you're still alive. And the secret to that is to figuring out and discovering the truth behind what puts a smile on your face. The truth behind it. Many people do all sorts of things to try and get a smile on their face. Some watch movies, others listen to music, others eat nice food, others dress themselves up, yeah? Others go see their friends, others go visiting places, traveling, earning money, having children, starting a family, getting themselves a pet. All sorts of things people do just so that they can have a smile on their face. And I have none of those things, but I'm still smiling. I don't have a TV. Actually, I don't have much at all, really. I'm probably the poorest man amongst all of us. My net asset, right? The total of my assets is a couple of robes and an alms bowl. That's the totality of what I own today. So if I were ever asked to leave the monastery, that's all I can take with me. Did you know that? I can't even take my toothbrush with me. Because a toothbrush is... I'm not entitled to a toothbrush. When you offer an Atapirikara to a Swaminahanse, whatever is in that package, the Atapirikara, that is what a Swaminahanse is entitled to for the rest of their lives. So you don't offer a kuti to him in the Atapirikara, do you? Meaning, if he has to leave, he can only take with him what is in the Atapirikara. So it's the eightfold offering. So in there you have an alms bowl. You have a needle and thread. In case your robes are torn, you can sew it up. Then you have the double rope, which is called the Sangalasiura, which you use particularly when it's cold. So to keep you warm, you have that. And at the monastery, when we sleep, before we lay down on our beds, we lay down our robe. So our beds, they have bed sheets, they have bed covers and so on, but we always put a robe over it. That's because our bed should always be clean enough so that when we pick up and leave, the next person can come and sleep on it. Because the bed doesn't belong to me. Our teachers always remind me, all of this belongs to the Buddha. So if the Buddha were to come in today and he would be looking for a bed, you should be able to offer him your bed. So we keep our beds in such a state that it is always available to offer if the Buddha were to come and ask for one. If a Buddha were to arrive at your home, you'd give them the best you have, right? You'd give the Buddha the best you have. And the same goes. So whenever we use our kuti, we keep it neat, tidy, spick and span, so that if ever the Buddha were to come in and said, I want a kuti to spend the night, then he can take the kuti that we're in, and it always has to be clean and tidy. Because it belongs to the Buddha. We're only using it on rent. Nothing belongs to me besides my alms robe and my two robes. While one robe is on me, the other is on the clothesline. It's been washed. You know how simple life is when you have little to worry about? When you have few things that belong to you? Shall we make a list of the things that belong to me and the list of things that belong to you? Okay, I accept defeat. I can count them on the fingers of one hand. Actually, I probably have far too many fingers on one hand to count all my possessions. Life is very simple. This is not mine. That's why every day you'll see me using whichever one. So when we get into the car, Anagarika Mahathas, they prepare one or two Vatapat so that we can take one for the sermon. That's it. Once I'm done with this, this is returned. Then I have a prayer mat. That is not mine. It is for me to use. The reality of this is, although we don't know it, you know, everything that you have today, including your bodies, are actually just there for you to use. They're not yours in the first place. I want to prove that to you. If you can have this kind of thinking and apply it to all things that you ever come across in life, your life will be simple. Far simpler than it is today. You will feel that burden lighten. Honestly, take my word for it for now, ladies and gentlemen. After all, my task is to help lighten the load for you. That's what I'm here to do. As I have managed to do for myself with the help of my most respectable and most loved teachers, I'm here to help you do the same. Lighten the load. Don't you feel heavy? Don't you feel heavy? How heavy? Life is heavy, isn't it? You feel the burden of life. My shoulders are light. I travel light. I live light. I sleep light. I wake up light. I'm just light. I am light. How can I be so happy all the time? Don't you ever wonder that? How come Swaminhas is always so happy all the time? Have you ever seen me angry? Annoyed? I can pretend to be annoyed. Oh, ask Sudhasya. I'm a very good actor. I can pretend to be annoyed so much so that you'll think that, my God, this man. I can pretend to be so annoyed. But inside of me, I'm always cool. It's not a miracle. If it were a miracle, there would be no point in me talking to you about it, because it's a miracle. So we don't know how it happens, right? Miracles, we don't know how they happen. But these things are not miracles, ladies and gentlemen. There's a logic behind it. Last week we spoke about karma and vipaka. Right? Now, what you might have thought was a miracle as to how things work, how you see, how you smell, how you taste, how you function as a human being, if you thought that that was all a miracle, well, last week you discovered that none of this is a miracle. It's very logical. There's a mechanism as to how everything works in this world, and that mechanism is called the law of cause and effect. It's the overarching phenomenon or principle that guides and drives everything that you see around us. So you see, once you realize that everything is driven by the principle of cause and effect, you just let cause and effect take over. Now what do you have to do? We feel like we are so burdened because we always feel like we are the ones who have to take this responsibility. We are the ones who have to make that world turn on its axis. We feel that way. You feel like I have to look after my family. I have to do this. I have to run the country. I have to do my business. I have to do this. I have to do that. Good Lord, how many things have I got to do? I'm a mother. I have to look after 3 children. I'm a father. I have to look after a whole family. I'm a teacher. I have a whole classroom worth of students to look after. I'm the boss. I'm the CEO of this company, and I have so many people who look up to me, and I have to look after all of them. At our monastery, very soon, I think, if not the end of this year, certainly by next year we're going to top 1,000 people at the monastery. I've given all that to cause and effect. The principle of cause and effect is what manages the organization, not me. Guru Hamdur has asked me to lead the organization, fair enough. You know what I've done? I've delegated it. So he delegated it to me, and I've delegated it to cause and effect. And cause and effect is overarching. It's everything. It's big. It's grand. It's out there. It's bold. It's like, it's God. Right? So when God's there to look after all my work, why do I need to worry? As they say, come unto me all ye who are weary and burdened, and I will let you free. I will set you free, and I am free. Because you know what I did? I went unto thee. I went to the Dhamma. I went to the Buddha. I went to the Mahasangha. And I let down my burden. Today, not that I want to, I could leave this country. No, I'm not running for president, no. No, I would never. Because there are people who are far, far, far more qualified than I am to do that. I'm not talking about my qualifications. I'm not qualified to run the country. But I can do it with peace of mind. I can do it happily. This country might not go on to become the wealthiest or the most successful by today's measures, but people will be able to live happily. We might become a smaller country. People will start coming up and taking our land. Right? We might become a very small country, maybe the size of the monastery. Everything else will be, part of it will be India, part of it will be Pakistan, part of it will be, I don't know, Russia, another part will be wherever. We'll be a very small country. But as long as people are happy to live there and they can live harmoniously, that's all. You know, whenever we think that we are Sri Lankan, we have to keep reminding ourselves that. Did you know that? I was just talking with Sudha Sihandra on the way here. As we drove past the basketball courts, I was explaining to him, see, now those children, once the whistle is blown, they have to keep reminding themselves with every chitta which team they're on. Because no one belongs to a team. You have to keep reminding yourself which team you're on. Each chitta has to do that. So the irony of it is, although we believe that we belong to something, although we feel that we are Sri Lankan, although you might feel that you are Sinhalese or Tamil or whatever you are, all of these things are creations of the mind. And because they are creations of the mind, as every mind arises and passes away, when the next mind arises, you have to feed it all that data. You have to give it all that information, once again, right from scratch. It's like a game of snake and ladders, every single chitta. You have to start from scratch. It's back to square one every single time. So that's why people are so busy. You've got to constantly keep reminding yourself who you are. Is this making sense? I haven't precepted you yet, that's why. Fine, let's start with that then. Otherwise I get carried away. Because I travel light, you know. So when the wind blows, I'm blown with it. Right? Let's bring our palms together. In veneration of the great master who set us free and who will set us free, who is our guide, who is our teacher, who is the epitome of freedom and the fount of wisdom, may our veneration be to his holy name.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස.
Let's do a quick recap of what we discussed last week, and then that'll be a segue into what we want to talk about today. And I'll explain to you what I mean by, you have to keep reminding yourself who you are. And the reason you have to do that, it is because you are nobody. Truth be told, you are nobody. But I know you don't like to think that way. Because right from our younger years, from our formative years, what do we try to become? Somebody, right? That's the thing. All your lives, you've tried to become a somebody. And then you begin to listen to the Dhamma one fine day. And you realize that all these somebodies that we have created in our minds, these are all creations of the mind. And then, what you have to do after that is to try and shed away all those layers of somebodies. Ultimately, you're back to where you started, which was you are a nobody. Now, this might sound like a riddle to you right now. Again, I see some new faces today in the audience, which is fabulous. Welcome to the family. It makes my life interesting. Because I have to now pretend that we've not spoken ever before. I don't know you and you don't know me. Hi. But I love this. You know, every day someone new comes along, someone joins on the ship. This is the ark that Noah is supposed to build. They'll come in two by two. Hurrah, hurrah. Sometimes they come one by one. Sometimes they come two and then they become three. That's okay. The more the merrier. The more the merrier, as long as we're all heading in the same direction. Then everyone is part of this one community. We're all one when we have a shared purpose, aren't we? It's when we are divided in purpose. Ultimately, that's all it is really. Each chitta. What's the difference between these two chittas? What's the difference between two chittas? There's no difference. But when you have a different purpose, if you laden this with purpose, on a vipaka level, the purpose of one of these chittas is possibly to see. Ditte dittamattam. As the Buddha told Dharuchirya. Dharuchirya was one of the 80 great arahants of the time. He was foremost among those who were quickest to understand the Dhamma. Just think about that. Wouldn't you like to be that? All the Buddha said to him was, Dharuchirya, ditte dittamattam. You can count the words he said on your 10 fingers. Ditte dittamattam. Ditte, ditta, matta. Right? Ditta, matta could also be considered one word. Right? You can bind them together. So, ditte, ditta, matta, that's two words. Sute, sutta, matta. Four words. Mute, muta, matta. Six words. Vinyate, vinyata, matta. Eight words. You got it. And, 3, 2, 1, he's an arahant. No wonder he was bestowed with the honor of those who were quickest to understand the Dhamma, Dharuchirya. He was called Dharuchirya because he wore no robes, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I often try to convince you, spiritual liberation doesn't have anything to do with your physical being, whether you're man or woman. What you're clad in, whether you're dressed in white or saffron, It makes no difference. Darucirya was called Darucirya because Daru is Dara. Wood. Sticks. So his tradition was such that he clad himself in a dress made out of branches from trees, stuff that he'd picked up. So if you'd seen him back then, you'd have been scared. You'd have wondered, who is this? Because he resembled, he didn't resemble any, you know, like a normal person in society. Darucirya, because that was his chivara. That was his robe. A robe that was made out of branches of trees and twigs and things like that. Of course, there was in samsara, he had accumulated plenty of merits. Plenty of merits so that on this encounter of the Buddha, only a few words were needed for him to discover and explore and understand the Dhamma. And so that is what happened. I mean, I can't think of a greater gift than that. But he didn't live very long. You know what happened? He didn't live very long. He lived long enough though. What do most other people do? They live very long. But they don't live long enough. My, today is a good sermon. I don't know where this is coming from. Thank you. Most people, they live very long, but they don't live long enough. Darucirya didn't live very long, but he lived long enough. Because as soon as he discovered the Dhamma, as soon as he heard the Buddha's preaching and he became an arahant, then he went looking for robes. Because now he was a bhikkhu. He was a bhikkhu and the Buddha, it was his time to ordain in the sasana. So he went looking for a robe. Because he could not be a monk in what he was clad in at the time. He was wearing branches, right? So twigs from trees and so on. He needed to find a robe. So he went looking for a robe. And then what happened? There was a bull. There was a furious bull. And this bull had actually been possessed by a spirit. Someone who in a previous life had a grudge with Darucirya. So it was a she back when she was alive, and now this was a bull, and so she'd possessed this bull and she was looking for an opportunity to kill this man. So as soon as Darucirya became an arahant and he went looking for robes, this bull was angry and furious, she came and attacked him. And that was the end of Darucirya. Probably the arahant who lived for... Actually, no, there have been those who have lived shorter than that. There was one arahant who died on the stake. It was a punishment. So the king at the time... There were accusations that the particular individual was a robber, and so the king sent his troops to bring this man in, and then he was convicted, and so he was supposed to be impaled to death, and then he was put on a stake. So he was a bhikkhu at the time, actually. He was a monk. So the Buddha never went to the king pleading to release this man. Can you imagine that? So he's now on a pail, and over time he's going to keep sliding on this. Now these were punishments they used to give back then in the medieval times. There were all sorts of interesting forms of punishment back then. You don't remember, right? You thought I was going to ask you don't know, right? You don't remember, right? There was one called the brazen bull. One of these days I'll show you them. Right? Those devices. mastermind creations they were. So it was an iron casket. It took the shape of a bull. That's what a bull looks like, by the way. And then they'd light a fire. And then you put the man inside this. And then seal it. And then as it gets hot inside, they'd start screaming. Of course, anyone would. And those screams sounded like the cry of a bull. Because it would echo inside this chamber. And that's how they would die. These are punishments from the medieval times. Aren't you glad that you're not alive then and you're alive now? Now, these days, you know, you have to go to court, and it's not like one man gets to decide what happens to you. But it was not so back then. It was the king. He decided. If he thought you were guilty, you were guilty. There was no room for argument. There was no room for discussion. His word was law. But today we live in a world where there's democracy, and you can argue your case. You can go to court. But those days, you didn't have all that. And then there were other forms of punishment. There was a barrel. There was honey in there. This barrel, it was filled with honey. Half. And then you got to sit in it. This was a punishment. You had to sit in it. And wait. Your hands were tied. Legs were tied, so you couldn't get out of it. And then what happens now? When you have honey there? The bees start coming. All sorts of insects, they start coming in. And because you've got honey on your body, now they start attacking you. And then you got to bear that pain until you die. So you get stung to death. You think the electric chair is bad, right? Just imagine being burned to death. Imagine being stung to death. Then there were other contraptions. There was a bed. On which you had to lay down. Arms this way, legs this way. And then there were... Your arms were tied to a machine, to a lever. And then your legs were tied to a lever. And then there was a rope. Or some kind of device that were used to tighten these screws. And as they tightened, your body got stretched. This half in that way, this half the other way. These were punishments that were given back then, in the medieval times. You don't? Remember, yes. Why do I use the word remember? Yes, that's right. Not you don't know, you don't remember. People don't remember these things, so people live happily. People don't realize that these are all vipaka generated by the karma. The environment is different today. The environment is different today because today we have democracy. Today we have a judicial system. Today we have courts. We have supreme courts. We have human rights courts. Those days, you didn't have any of that. So therefore, whatever your causes were, the king decided that you had to be beheaded. And that was it. His word. If he decided you had to be executed, you had to be executed. That was it. You can plead mercy, right? But if he feels, if it's a good day, if his wife has been good to him, then you are pardoned. But if not, let's say his chef forgot to add salt to the food, that's it. So today's not a good day for you. This was how justice was served. Was it fair or unfair? What do you think? Fair or unfair? When it comes to karma and vipaka, remember this and remember this for the rest of your lives. It's always fair. You can never be served a sentence for which you have not committed a sin. Do you remember last week I asked you, I'm going to show you a pen. Do you have what it takes to see the pen? Do you? You don't? You don't know. You don't know until I show it to you. The fact that you can see this pen right now means you have the vipaka to see it. All I did was create the environment. As I create the environment, the vipaka starts to draw. And the fact that you can see this pen means you have the vipaka up here. That vipaka was generated by the karma that you'd done. The karma to see, karma to hear, karma to smell, karma to taste, karma to feel, and karma to have thoughts. Your karma generates your vipaka. This is karmic energy. So it's the same thing that happened here. There was karmic energy. But today the environment is different. So therefore, if someone accuses you, and if you are found, if you are accused of a crime, you can argue your case. You can go and find the best lawyers. Now you see, in some cases, some lawyers can argue your case and you can get out scot-free. Other lawyers can argue your case, but you may not win the case. Haven't there been times where rulings have been overturned? And isn't that why people spend a lot of money when there's a court, when there's an accusation against them? They'd spend a lot of money to try and find the best lawyers. People do that. It makes sense. It makes sense to you now. It makes sense because what you're doing when you go looking for a good lawyer is you're creating a good environment. You're creating a conducive environment such that the best of your vipakas can be drawn. That's why it's good to find a good doctor. One doctor might be able to heal you, another doctor may not be able to. Same patient, same symptoms, same illness. But it's not the doctor who decides that. The doctor is simply the environment. The environment constantly draws on the vipaka, your own vipaka. But we have to take responsibility though. We can't just say it's someone else who decides whether I get better or not. No, they are simply the environment. Remember, there is only half of the story. The other half is your karma. So if you didn't have the karma to see this pen, the moment I turn this up, you'd have to go blind. Or something gets stuck in your eye and you had to close your eyes for a moment. And then I said, turn it back around, then you get to see again. That's how it would work. But you have plenty of karma to see this. That is why you see it. The principle that I wanted to explain to you last week, and this is what we are going over, using various other examples today, is ultimately, remember what the last thing I said last week, there is no doer. There is no one who does. It is only the done. I need you to understand that you are simply a process. Not I need you to, you need to understand. You need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that you are simply a process. Remember how I always wear my smile on my face? If it's only a process, what do I have to do? Can you make it rain? Can you make it rain? You can't. Let's say it's time to rain. Is there something you have to do to make it rain? No, because it's just a process. Right? You understand that there is you and there's nature. I mean, this is how we generally tend to understand the world we live in. There's us and there's nature. This is where it's flawed. We think there's us and there's nature. So when we do something, we think it's artificial. Yeah, when we do something, when we create something, we think it's an artificial creation. Everything else is natural. Meaning nature created half of this world, the other half I created. Man created, so therefore it's artificial. So who created man? Who created man? That's nature again. What about everything that man does? That's also nature. So how can we say that something that man creates is artificial? So there are natural waterfalls and there are artificial waterfalls, right? There are natural ponds and artificial ponds. Yeah? How can that be? It's not so. We only feel that something's artificial because we feel that it is I who did it. It is not you who does it. It's done. I'm going to explain something to you today. If you understand exactly what I mean there, you will be proven without a shadow of a doubt that there cannot be a doer here. All that happens is things happen and then you take credit for it. Once again, things happen and you take credit for it. To start us off, I'm going to do a little activity. Right? Because some of you have had a heavy breakfast. How do I know that? Right, here's what I want you to do. I'm going to call out a few verbs. Verbs, doing things. And you're going to do me a favor. And you're going to say, I. What are you going to say?
I? No, not this I.
I? No, not that I. I. Okay? Let's give it a go. C. I. Okay. Hear. Smell. Eat. Taste. Wink. Stand. Sleep. Drink. Bathe. That's exactly what happens. Although you may not know it, that's exactly what happens. Here's what you think happens. Okay? First you say I, and then I'll say the verb. Okay, go on. Eat. Drink. Sleep. Stand. Bathe. Wash. Brush. Smile. Cry. Suffer. Smile, yaar. That's the difference between our two worlds. What really goes on is what we did earlier. What you think goes on is what we did next. This is where there's a disparity. There's what actually happens, and there's what you think happens. What you think happens doesn't change reality. But that's why you suffer.
I didn't finish the story about the Arahant one, Ahadun one, on the pail. So what happened was, the punishment was that he was supposed to sit on it, and he was going to be impaled to death.
And the Buddha got news of this. That one of his bhikkhus had been wrongly accused of this and was sentenced to death by impalement. The Buddha got news of this. He quickly arrived in the vicinity and he started to preach to this monk. While he was on this pail, the monk listened to the Dhamma. Can you imagine this happening? While you're up here, you are a prithakjana. Yeah? While you're around here, you're a sotapanna. Amidst excruciating pain. Do you see the Buddha's compassion? Why did he not try to save him? Why did he not go speak to the king and say, "Oh dear king, you know, I am the Buddha. Right? you need me more than I need you. He could have said that, right? O king, almighty king, I am the Buddha. I am the supreme Buddha. Right? So you need me more than I need you 100 times over. So I ask you, I command you even. He could have said that. He's a descendant of a king. Right? So I request you at least to let him off. Let him go. It is not he who has committed the sin. It is not he who has committed the crime. But the Buddha never did that. Because what he realized was, he has plenty of karma. There was plenty of karma that was done, that even if he'd saved him from this, he probably would have gotten struck by lightning. There was no escape. There was only one escape. What escape is that? The NTG. What's the NTG? The Noble Triple Gem. That was the only escape. So rather than walking to the king and asking him to repeal his order and to get him off the stake, the Buddha preached the Dhamma. By the time he was dead, he'd become an arahant. Never to go through this suffering ever again. Having become an arahant, if you had given him the option, let's imagine we could turn time back, and then we ask this monk, now you're an arahant, venerable sir, would you rather have had the Buddha save you from the punishment or give you the Dhamma? What do you think the monk would have said? Hands down, every single time you ask me, I would have chosen what the Buddha did for me. Free me from the clutches of samsara. Not free me from a pail. This is temporary. What the Buddha did was permanent. That's the beauty of the sasana. Nowhere else, folks, you will find this. I don't mean here. I don't mean under this roof. Nowhere else will you find this solace. Nowhere else will you find this freedom. I say this because I mean it. There's nowhere else. You can travel the whole world. You can go to the moon. You can go to the end of this solar system. Try the next galaxy if this doesn't work for you. You will not find a better solution to the problem of suffering. This is the only solution. I speak with conviction. This is what the Buddha offered him. And therefore he was forever free. Because you know what? There might have been even more karma. Like today it was this. Perhaps the next time round, if he'd escaped this, or maybe in the next life, it was supposed to be execution. Or maybe the electric chair. Or maybe to be trodden by elephants. These were the punishments that were given back then. But he escaped all that. That is what the sasana does. Now, where were we? Before we got on the pail, where were we? Where were we? Thank you. Hi. So you think this is what goes on. Here's what really goes on. You think this is what goes on. Here's what really goes on. So for those at the back, C-I is what really goes on. What you think is I-C. In fact, that's how grammar is constructed, because it's to reflect what we experience. Right? How we perceive the world is how we construct language so that we can communicate. But the Buddha's language is very different. This is very worldly. This is how everyone in this world constructs language, because this is how they perceive.
But this is what really goes on.
CI is what goes on, IC is what you perceive. Let me explain to you how that happens. This is the stuff you were born to learn. You can thank my teachers later. This is the stuff we were all born to learn. This follows on from our conversation last week. So, give me a quick show of hands if you weren't here last week. Okay. And of those who were not able to watch last week's talk online either? Alright, so there are a few. Fair enough. Mind you, there were a few requests from the audience last week as well to do a recap today before we continue. So, fair dues. Let's see how this works. So last week, what we talked about is how a chitta is born. Okay? A chitta is born. A chitta is born when, for instance, your eye comes into contact with an object. When these two things come together, or come into contact, this is passa, right? There's a complicated process here, which I'm not going to get into detail, where it goes to the brain and then the mind and all sorts, right? But ultimately, a chitta is born. Can you all see from there? You can't, can you? Don't pretend like you can. You okay? Okay. There's room up here, madam, if you want to move forward. You've come all the way from wherever, right? I don't want you to miss out on this. You can move your chairs over there. You can come up here if you want. You sure? All right. We're all family here, okay? You can sit on laps if you wish. Are you sure? You're okay? Yes? Great. So, Anagarika Mahathya, move to the back. Sure. This is a chitta. A chitta is born so that you can perceive what just happened. You only perceive the world because these chittas are born within you. Some call it a mind. We call it a chitta. Because this mind, it has various interpretations. Right? In fact, you might even hear me refer to the mind in one context, in a different meaning to it in a different context. But whenever I say chitta, I always mean the same thing. Because this is the Pali term and this is the word that the Buddha used. Chitta. A chitta is your sitta. Yeah? So a chitta is born when one of your senses come into contact with the with an outside world object. These senses can be eye, ear, nose, tongue, touch, or even your mind. Now, that's where the confusion comes. Excuse me. The mind itself can come into contact with thoughts, meaning memories. Like you could completely shut down your five senses and still have memories, right? So you'd ask me then, how does that work? That's because the mind itself can come into contact with material that it had generated previously. But that's memory. Now when a chitta is born, the purpose of this chitta is to perceive what has just happened in the world. So this is like a notification. Titi, now it's time to read the message and find out who's texted you, what the text is about, what's going on out there, right? What's going on with the world. Your mind allows you, helps you, facilitates, enables you to understand the world around you. That's why we call it perception. We perceive. The process of perception, I emphasize the word process, it's a process. Perception is a process. So in a process, various things have to happen in a given sequence so that the process of perception can happen properly. Here you will have heard Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankhara and Vijnana, these terms. At a very basic level, you can understand the Rupa as being the element, the cognitive element that was produced by result of these two coming into contact. Vedana is the notification, right? Something's happened. Not what's happened, something's happened. Sanya is getting to understand, put detail into it. Try and make sense of it. This is your recognition. Recognition because it's recognition. You have to go and dip into your memory, try and understand the world from what you've understood about it before. This is all sanya. Sankhara is the process of putting all this together, right? Your response to this outside world stimulus, and then finally vijnana, which is the ultimate end product of this whole process. So in fact you could think of this as a process. Yeah? This whole thing is a process. And by the time you come to vijnana, you have now perceived it. Therefore now your mind is aware of this flower. Okay? So that's a quick whistle stop tour of what we've discussed in previous sermons. This led us to what we discussed last week. When this happens, ladies and gentlemen, what I've shown you on the board is actually what happens in the mind of an arahant, which is not good for us because none of us are arahants. So for us, there's this and then some. In the mind of an arahant, this is all that happens. But for those of us who are not arahants, there's something else that goes on. A sense of self. A sense of self. A sense of self hijacks this process. Now I use these words very carefully and I use them deliberately. A sense of self hijacks this process. What happens to an aircraft when it gets hijacked? You remember? Yeah? Many, 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 many years ago? Yeah? No laughing matter, I'm sure, but you know what happens when an aircraft gets hijacked? Right? Destination changes. Outcome changes. What was meant to serve, serves to destroy. That's what happens when you are hijacked by evil forces. There is no greater force of evil than the force of I. I am the greatest evil this world has ever seen. So beware. You don't feel that, though, do you? You always think that everyone else is the problem. I am the saint. I'm the holy one. You can see the halo above your... I can see it. You all have one. It's just everyone else. They are the problem. People are... Who's bad to you? Do you ever say, I am bad to myself? Have you ever caught yourself saying that? I am bad to myself. You never say that. You say, people are bad to me. Look at me. You know, I'm so good. I'm so nice. I'm so gentle. I'm so kind. But people are always so bad to me. Why do they have to be so bad to me? So it's they who are always bad. The others... But you know what the Buddha says? The Buddha says, there is nothing that causes you more harm than an untamed mind. There is no worse enemy to you than your own untamed mind. This is what the Buddha says. Don't take my word for it. And then he also goes on to say, there is no one who does you more good than whom? Then what? A tamed mind. Now who's your refuge? Yourself. The hand at the end of your own sleeve, ladies and gentlemen, is your best refuge. And whose hand is that? Your own. Which is a metaphor to mean that you are your only refuge. You are the best refuge. But only once it's tamed. When it's untamed, it causes you no end of distress, suffering, torment, disappointment, and the list goes on. The 11 great fires you will have heard are all creations, are all products, byproducts, if you like, of the sense of I. This is the world's greatest evil. This is the destroyer. This is the creator and this is the destroyer. The world's greatest evil is I. If you can tame your mind and kill this sense of I, you are free. So now you see, do you, that your battle is not with another person? So what good is there to fight another nation or your neighbor? What good is there in fighting an enemy when actually the enemy lies within? That is why when you begin to understand the Dhamma, you go from becoming a source of menace to others to a source of kindness to others, because your fight, your battle is no longer with others. You realize that it's an internal battle that I have to do. So why fight another man when actually I am my own enemy? You literally are your own enemy. When you say, I am my own enemy, yes, I am my own enemy. This sense of I. Now let me show you how it happens. This chitta was born as a result of the I and object coming into contact. I mean this I here. This is a vipaka process. But we don't stop at vipaka. What do we also do? What do we also do? We do karma. You may have wondered, what does karma mean? What is karma actually? People talk about karma, they talk about good karma, they talk about bad karma, right? What is actually karma? Karma is the process of creating a sense of self. I'll repeat. Karma is the action of creating a sense of self in your mind. If you would cease that, if you could cease the creation of a sense of self within yourself, you have ceased karma. And all that is left is vipaka. That is why an arahant is referred to as one who has exterminated karma altogether. They are called punya papa pahinasa, as in punya karma, papa karma pahinasa. There are three types of karma that you'll find in Buddhist texts. There's the punya karma, there's the papa karma, there's called the aninjabi karma. Punyabi sankhara, apunyabi sankhara, and aninjabi sankhara. Let's not get too entangled about the third one. We'll talk about that another day. There's also a fourth, which is called kusala karma. Let me quickly jot them down on the board for you. This is only a means to an end. Remember what I explained to you last week? My purpose here is not to try and make you experts in the Dhamma, right? It's only to help you attain Nibbana. Nisaranattaya, Naghanattaya. This is a raft. Get on it and ferry yourself across to the other side, and once you are done, carry it on your head. Yeah? Once you are done, what do you do? Let it go. Don't use the rope that I throw you to come out of the hole that you're in to put a noose around your neck and hang on it. That's why I'm very careful sometimes when we start going into the depths of the Dharma, because I know you're very keen. I know you're very curious. I know you're all inquisitive because you're a very educated audience. Education is in your blood. It's what we've learned. I'm the same, no different. Because we've always learned, you know, if we educate ourselves, we learn, we study, we do our work and we study hard, right? We can get to a good place. And that's how you have got to a good place. We've all been very privileged to have a good education. So our minds, our brains are trained to educate ourselves all the time. So wherever we see a new piece of information, we grasp it. And we put it into our memory banks. And then we feel that we have somehow become wiser. Knowledge is not wisdom. Actually, some of the wisest people I have met hardly know anything at all. Knowledge does not equate wisdom. If you use knowledge in the right way, that's called intelligence. That's your knowledge. If you know how to apply knowledge, that's called intelligence. Once you've applied knowledge in the right way, now you achieve wisdom. Most people stop here. Most people stop there. Portilla was the best example of recent times. Every Buddha's era, he was born into a sasana, and then even in the last birth, as a bhikkhu, he walked up to the Buddha and said, "Venerable sir, I know all the Dhamma that you have preached. Right? So please hold me in high regard." What he'd done was he'd acquired all this knowledge, but the one thing that he hadn't done was applied it, because he was not intelligent enough to use the Dhamma in that manner. It's like anything. This pen. Does a pen write? Does a pen write on its own? No. What good is a pen if you don't know how to write? It's just a paperweight then, isn't it? So this is knowledge. Knowing how to write is intelligence. Written text is a sign of wisdom. Now you get the gist. So this is what we're all after. I'm trying to get you here. So once you're here, you can let go of all that knowledge. You can let go of all that knowledge, because knowledge is not our focus, it is not our goal. That's why I'm a bit weary sometimes when we start getting into the little nooks and crannies and get started in the depths of the Dhamma. But I trust that you will only use it for this purpose. Okay, so where were we? Karma? Or was it Chitta or I? Where were we? Karma. You're on karma. Karma? You're on karma, yeah? If you weren't here, I don't know where I'd end up. I'll start talking about, I say Namotasa, and by the time I'm left, I'm talking about, I don't know, whatever. You have four types of karma. There's punya karma, there's papa karma, there's aninjabi karma, and there's kusala karma. These two we are very familiar with, because we do it all the time. So much so that actually, you know, even when you offer something to the Buddha, you do a punya karma. When you invite the Swami Nuhanse to deliver a sermon, that's a punya karma. If you prevent a sermon from happening, that's a papa karma. If you prevent someone from taking their meal, that's a papa karma. It all depends on what your intention is. If you take something away from someone so that it leads them to suffering, then that's a papa karma. Aninjaba karma are karmas, like I said, it's not something we need to be interested in too much just yet, because they start becoming of interest to us when we start talking about meditative states. Right? These are karmas that are done by individuals when they go into deep states of meditation and with the objective of being born in the Brahma worlds. So But that's not our focus, because we're not really interested in being born in the Brahma worlds. Where are we interested in being born? In which worlds? Not in the Brahma worlds, but in the... Which worlds? Which worlds? Good. Good. We are not being born at all, right? So we are not interested in being born in the Brahma worlds or the Deva worlds or the human worlds. We are not interested in any of that. Our aspiration is Nibbana, not to be born anywhere. Then you have Kusala Karma. Kusala Karma can only happen when you have an understanding of the Dhamma. It cannot happen any other way. There will be sometimes references to Punya Karma as Kusala Karma. Some might refer to Punya Karma as Kusala Karma. You don't have to have a go at them if they choose to refer to Punya Karma as Kusala Karma. But Kusala Karma in itself, when you have this kind of categorization, it is in its own class. Kusala Karma starts to happen at the point you become a Sotapanna. So really, Kusala Karma are a type of karma that are reserved for noble ones. The first Kusala Karma you do is becoming a Sotapanna. No Kusala can happen before that. Kusala is in fact cleansing the mind. That's why it's called Kusala. To cleanse the mind is Kusala. Cleanse the mind of what? Defilements. Give it to me in two words. Ignorance and attachment. So to cleanse the mind to a state where you stop sensing a sense of self, that is Kusala Karma. Once again, right now, remember we did the activity a moment ago? I said the verb, you said I. Right? Then you said I and I said the verb. In a mundane chitta, that's how the world is perceived. I do things. I see, I hear, I smell, I taste and all that. Although that is your perception, what's really going on is see I, hearing I, tasting I, smelling I and so on. But the I or the sense of self, it's there. That sense of self happens with any three of these. Actually all three of these. Whether it's Aninjabhikarma, Punya Apunyabhikarma or Papa Karma or Punyabhikarma. These are called Sankara. Aninjabhisankara, Punyabhisankara or Apunyabhisankara or Karma. Either way is fine. With all three of these, you have the sense of self. With Kusala Karma, what you try and do is to eradicate the sense of self. So you can see, these are all worldly. This is out of this world. In other words, these are mundane and this is supramundane. Laukika and Lokottara. So a Kusala Karma is a Lokottara Karma. It's what helps you to step outside of this worldly existence and to actually see the world as it really is. Why do I say that it helps you to see the world as it really is? Because you're hijacked. See, ignorance and attachment hijacks your mind. Therefore, no matter what goes on here, it wraps around a sense of self. So throughout this process, you are sensing a sense of self. But just like you can't build the walls up without a foundation, remember that analogy now, just like you can't build the walls up without a foundation, you can't build a sense of self without a chitta being there in the first place. Now, if you start connecting the dots, what I said earlier will start to make sense. Which comes first? Once again, just as you can't build the walls without the foundation, first you have to lay the foundation, you can't have a sense of self without a chitta being there in the first place. How is a chitta born? How is a chitta born? Chakkuncha paticcha rupecha uppajyati chakku vijnana. That is the birth of a chitta. Okay? When the eye comes into contact with an object, a chitta is born. Chakkuncha paticcha rupecha uppajyati chakku vijnana. A chitta is born. What is the birth of the sense of self? What are the causes for that? Ignorance and attachment. So ignorance and attachment gives rise to a sense of self. I coming into contact with the object gives rise to a citta. Give me a show of hands if this is not making sense at all. It's perfectly fine if it's not. I can go over it 1,000 times. Good. So it looks like it's making sense. Right. First of all, I'm going to write citta here. You tell me what are the causes. What gives rise to citta? This is one example.
Object.
Plus. Senses. Okay? So when an object comes into contact with one of your senses, it gives rise to a citta. What gives rise to a sense of self? Can you see down there? You can't, can you? What gives rise to a sense of self? Ignorance. And attachment gives rise to a sense of self. So this is not really an I, but rather it's actually a sense. A sense of I. We'll detail that a little later. Sense of I. Where does this ignorance take place? I mean, where does ignorance live? In space? Where does it live? In the citta, right? So if ignorance has to live in a citta, what has to come first? Chicken or egg? Which has to come first? The citta has to come first. Mustn't it? Yes? If ignorance can only hijack a citta, then what has to come first? This is rocket science, okay? If ignorance has to hijack a citta, then what has to come first? A citta has to come first. So first of all, a citta is born by one of the senses coming into contact with an object. Now you have the citta and the perception process has started. It's kicked off. Secondary, this is a secondary phase. You have ignorance which acts on the citta, and then the attachment is a function of the citta which then creates a sense of self. So which comes first then? This process or that process? Citta process or the sense of I process comes first? The citta process comes first. What comes later? Sense of I comes later. Now tell me. Which one is right? I see or see I? See I. See? I told you. See I. But you've never felt that that was how things were, right? You never perceive it like that. Because the sense of I does not let you perceive it that way. This is your trap. But now you must begin to understand, at least we are now laying down the basics for you to understand, that what you perceive cannot be what happens for real. I mean, that alone is a huge victory. Give yourselves a pat on the back. Well done. That alone is a grand victory, ladies and gentlemen. Don't take it lightly. Just the mere fact that you understand this sense of I is a creation. It's kind of like an afterthought. It happens after the truth. So this is the lie. This is the truth. Actually, that's another good way of thinking about it. Which can come first, a lie or a truth? Someone comes up and says, the sun rises in the west. What do you have to say? You say, it's a lie. How do you know? Because you know the truth. So which came first? The truth came first. Always. See, you armed with the truth were able to disarm me because you said, no, you're lying because I know the truth. Now, what if you didn't know the truth? You were born blind and you have no sense of direction. Right? Then I say the sun rises in the west. You can't argue that, you can't deny that. Because to you, that makes no sense at all. You can't even perceive because you're blind. So you don't know that there's such a thing called west, there's such a thing called the sun. It's out of your world, it's out of your realm of knowledge. So you can't really argue, you can't deny, you can't do anything, and that sentence makes no meaning to you. But when you say that is a lie, that is because you are armed with the truth already. So the truth must always come first. It always comes first. And the lie comes later. Now there are times where we misunderstand things. Now scientists do this all the time. Right? So when they first said that the atom was the smallest element, right, and everyone accepted that. Before that they said the earth was flat, remember? And everyone accepted that. And then poor Socrates had to give up his life for that. They got him to drink poison, right, didn't they? Out of a chalice, because he said the earth was round, but no one accepted that and said, you know, this is blasphemy. So they poisoned the poor bugger. Because the truth doesn't, you know, truth speakers, they don't last forever. Because the world must carry on. The world must go on. So anyone who comes speaking the truth, they won't last forever. The truth will always last, but those who speak the truth, they won't last for long. Be careful. If you start speaking the truth, people will get at you. Mara will get at you because this world belongs to the Mara. This world can only survive for as long as the world is full of lies. These are general statements. One day they will quote me. A Swaminuhanse once said this. This world can only survive for as long as there are plenty of lies to go around. See, we live in a world where we believe there are nations, countries. There's no such thing. Right? This is called India, this is called Pakistan. Says who? When did God give man the entitlement to draw a line on a piece of paper and say this south of the west of this is Pakistan, east of this is India? He created the world. Under the waters, all of this is one landmass. If you take the world, rid of it, rid all of the water, right? All you have left is like a half-eaten apple. Yeah, with bits sticking out, and there's a single core. So what's all this about? You know, this is that country, this is the other country, this is that country, and now they fight with each other. Territorial wars and all that. Nonsense. But now if I keep speaking this, what do you think they're going to do? If I keep speaking like this, if I keep saying these things, then someone is not going to be very happy. Because ignorance and attachment must survive. It'll always try to keep wisdom suppressed. So if you speak the truth, be careful, because your days are numbered. You see, the irony of it is, Buddhas, they come and go. Okay? Buddhas come and go, don't they? How many Buddhas have we had by now? Countless Buddhas. We've had countless Buddhas by now. But the world still exists. So which one's greater? Wisdom or ignorance? Which one's more potent? When you put it on the scales, it looks like ignorance is more potent. Because ignorance will always survive. Wisdom will have to die. But it'll be born again, and they'll have to die. And it'll be born again, and it'll have to die. While wisdom is alive, there will be those who take refuge in wisdom. A few, very few. And they will seek their salvation. But the rest will continue and the world will thrive. That's how it is. So strike while the iron is hot. Right now, the truth is there. Take it while it's there. Because they will not let us speak like this for very long. Some of you may already know the stories. When we started speaking the truth a few years back, those days we used to travel the country preaching the Dhamma. And they said, only at the monastery. So then they confined us to the monastery. So then what happened? Only those who were privileged, had the merits to come looking for us at the monastery, got the Dhamma. It was like that for many years. At least 2 years it was like that. And then slowly, for private audiences, they let us speak the truth. You can't blame anyone for this. If people don't have merits, whose fault is that? If people don't have the merits, whose fault is that? If a child suckles on its mother's breast and no milk comes out of it, whose fault is that? Is it the mother's? No. The child is not entitled to it. Otherwise, how come every other child gets fed, but not this one? We never point our finger outwards. That is why we are different to others. That is why you are all different to others. Because we always keep pointing our finger inwards, we always improve ourselves. Isn't that what we're here to do anyway? Shall we live a life whereby we've improved everyone else and we die the same miserable person we were born? Or how about we live a life so that we improve ourselves and in improving ourselves, we help others as well. I aspire to be a great oak tree that can give shelter to many others. So that little saplings can grow in my shelter. That's what I aspire to be. But first of all, I have to become an oak tree. I can't just be a teeny weeny plant and give anything to the world. Yeah, so we improve others by improving ourselves. Serve ourselves so that we can serve others. Serve others so that we can serve ourselves. They work mutually. It's one and the same after all. By serving others, we serve ourselves. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. I also have to say something else to add to that. We serve ourselves, and in doing so, we serve others. Because in the sasana, that's how it works. As I practice the Dhamma, and I cleanse my mind of defilements, the next day I bring my alms bowl to you, do you not earn more merits than the merits you earned the previous week? What do you think? You offer the same thing. Let's say you just offer a slice of banana. Just a slice. One thin, wafer thin slice of banana. That's it. That's all you offer. That's all you can afford. You offer the same wafer thin slice of banana every week. You do it religiously. But every week, Swaminhansa is not the same Swaminhansa. He practices the Dhamma. He cleanses his mind of defilement. He is busy doing kusala karma. So you don't get the same person the following week. You get a changed person. And the merits you earn out of that have magnified, have amplified, and you've not done anything differently. So you see, in improving myself, do I not create a better environment for everyone? This is the philosophy that I want to leave with you, ladies and gentlemen. This is the philosophy that we must all aspire to. We must all subscribe to this. I ask you to do this not just because I am doing this. I ask you to do this because this is what should be done. Improve yourselves. Work on yourselves. In every aspect of life that is good and that can serve mankind. If you are a good communicator, become a better one. Never stop. If you are a good leader, become a better leader. If you are a good mother, become a better mother. Never stop. Why do you have to stop when life has given you another chance? Life has given you a tomorrow. So why stop today? I ask you. If God has been so kind, if life has been so kind to give you another day, and that is tomorrow, then why stop today? Tomorrow is another opportunity to improve on ourselves. And in doing so, we grow taller. And our branches spread wider. And now we can give more shelter to those who need it. That's how I always wear a smile on my face. All of this is connected. It's an intricate web. Everything leads to the other thing. And that leads to this thing. That's how it is. This is why, you know, this is a comprehensive and holistic approach to Nibbana. That's why I don't just come here and talk to you the Dhamma. Look at what I just speak in with the last 5 minutes. Nothing to do with anicca, dukkha, anatta. I'm talking about oak trees. In reality, there's no such thing. There's just matter and energy. But I'm talking about communication skills. I'm talking about leadership skills. I'm talking about being a mother or a father. And how you should aspire to be a better mother and a father. That's nothing to do with anicca, dukkha, anatta. But that's what I'm saying. This is a holistic approach to Nibbana. So that when we get to Nibbana, the whole world will have benefited. Not just those who are keen on getting the Dhamma from us, but also those who want a smile from us. You know, the truth is this. It is only today that we want the Dhamma, right? Let's take ourselves back a few years. The Dhamma never interested us. What we wanted was to see a smile on our friends' faces. We mustn't forget our roots. There were many a day in our lives where the thing that kept us going was a smile on my neighbor's face. Today, they may not be ready yet to take the Dhamma. So if all I can give them is a smile, then why not? Among you are teachers, among you are doctors, among you are professionals of various sorts. You will have colleagues who work with you. You'll have your subordinates. You'll have your peers. You'll have your seniors. Perhaps today all they want is you to do your work properly. They want you to turn up to work on time. They want you to do a good day's job. That's what they want you to do. Let's do that for them for today. Because if they're impressed by that, then they'll ask you what your work ethic is and where it stems from. How come you're always punctual? They'll start asking you. Do you think punctuality has nothing to do with Nibbana? Oh, it has everything to do with it. You think good manners has nothing to do with Nibbana? Oh boy, it has everything to do with it. Because what is good manners if nothing more than making little sacrifices? Making little sacrifices so that another person can be happy. Isn't it? When you sneeze, you say, excuse me. You think that has nothing to do with Nibbana? It has everything to do with Nibbana. If you burp, you say, excuse me. When someone offers you something, you say, thank you. When someone holds the door for you, you say, thank you. When you ask for something, you say, please. Oh, it has everything to do with Nibbana. All good things in this world has something to do with Nibbana. That's why I said this is a holistic approach to Nibbana. That's the Nibbana that my teacher teaches me. Because not all will come to me for Nibbana. I must understand that. Some will be impressed by the way I walk. No? Some will be impressed by how little I eat. If you can convince me that you'll be happier if I ate little, I'll eat little. If that gives you joy in the sasana, if you feel, oh, how virtuous this monk is, he only eats a little. If that means you give a sadhukara to the sasana, I'm happy to eat a little. But that has nothing to do with Nibbana. But if that gets you to come to the monastery the next day and come looking for this monk who only eats a little, little. Because you've got to feed the infant its milk bottle. The baby needs a bottle. When the baby grows up, you feed it food, you feed it solid food. But while the baby is a baby, you feed it the bottle. That's how things are. That's how our teachers did with us. So, wearing that smile on your face is so important. Dressing yourself smart, that's so important. Trimming your fingernails is so important. At our monastery, you would not find a Swamin Mahanse or an Anagarika Mahatmi or an Anagarika Mahatya, you know, with dirty fingernails, untidy, clean, unclean, disheveled hair. You'd not find them like that. Their uniform should be smart. They should present themselves very well. We don't live an expensive life. We live a simple life. But whatever little we have, we keep it neat and smart and tidy. Because we understand that everything comes from our devotees. It is their hard work and their labor and their sleepless nights that they turn into offerings, and they offer it to the sasana, right? So we make it our life's purpose. First thing is nibbana, and secondly, how can we sustain ourselves on as little as we possibly can? Much of what you see at the monastery, the buildings, the dhamma halls, the kutis, whatever, the school that we have, the children's home that we have, much of what we've built there are actually savings that we have made, rations that we have made from the offerings that devotees have made for alms and maybe for robes. But what we do is we try and sustain ourselves on as little as we possibly can. So we don't leave lights on. We always switch them off. We check the taps, make sure that they're turned off. We check the lights are off. You won't see things of value dropped on the floor. If there's a pen on the floor, a rubber band on the floor, a paper clip on the floor, they always get picked up. So that we can be as little a burden as we can on society. And in every little that we save, we put towards serving the sasana. And then that helps build a school for the children. It helps build a children's home. It helps build a dhamma hall. That's why you'll never find us coming to you and asking, we are building a dhamma hall, please can you contribute? That's not how we do things there. We are building a pagoda, please can you contribute? We are building meditation hall, please can you contribute? We don't do things like that. Because for one reason, the Buddha has asked us not to go asking people for things that they don't like to give. Because to some, most people, not you, to most people, money is everything. They love their money more than they love their mothers. No? Are you going to deny? There are many people like that. They'd sell their mothers if they could for some extra cash. Some are like that. So we don't go asking for money. What we do is we ration on what we get. And we try and serve. But always leave something behind, even for those who are not interested in Nibbana just yet. That's why the smile is important. That's why being smartly groomed is important. That's why you won't always see me in a new robe, but you won't see me in a robe that's untidy. A robe that has not been washed for 3 months. You won't see me like that. I can promise you that when I walk past you, I'm not going to smell nice or bad. Neither. Neither. You're never going to come up to me and ask, Swaminas, what's that perfume? That will never happen. Hopefully you'll never have to ask me, Swaminas, haven't you had a wash lately? Neither of those things should happen. Because we are bhikkhus. We're not flowers to smell nice. There's a flower in my heart that's always in full blossom. That's what we do. I'm sharing with you a little bit about what being a monk is like from time to time. Is that okay? You're interested, aren't you? Yes. So this is just a small window. From time to time, I'll open this window. You can peek. And have a glimpse into what the life of a bhikkhu is like. But then, hey, you're pot plants. What can I do? So what happens first? I see or see I? See I. Think of this for a second. If it were I see, you would never be able to attain Nibbana. Where's all this coming from? If it were I see, you would never be able to become an arahant. Don't you see how? Because if I had to come first, and C came later, and I is a product of ignorance and attachment, and becoming an arahant is the cessation of ignorance and attachment, eradication of ignorance and attachment, and therefore the sense of I, now you wouldn't be able to see. Would you? Because if the I had to come first, and C came later, and your purpose of practicing the Noble Eightfold Path is to cease ignorance and attachment, eradicate ignorance and attachment, and therefore cease the sense of self, then if you are done with I, now where's the C going to happen? Do you see? That therefore that is not how it has to work. It has to be C first and I later. Hear first and I later. Taste first and I later. Smell first and I later. Feel first and I later. Think first and I later. Is always I later. And it's because I is always comes later. Now you can take out the I and leave the vipaka process of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking. And that is the arahant. So here's a little karmasthana that you can do for the course of next week. You need not sit cross-legged for this. You can do it doing whatever you're doing. In fact, you can do it right now. So what are you doing right now? Give it to me in a sentence. A full sentence, subject, verb, object. I am sitting. That's what you say. Right? That's what you say. But now contemplate on what really happens. Sitting, I am. We talked about this. I am, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were in the other hall, I remember, putting it up on the board, and I said, this whole thing is a sentence. This is an entity, and this is existence. Yeah? I is the entity, and am is existence. So, the existence of an entity, Sakkaya. This is Sakkaya. If you think, in other words, if you don't see that this is what's going on, now you have Sakkaya Ditti. If your view, your drushti is that, I see it's what's going on, and that is how it is, and that is how I feel, and that's how it is in reality. Now you're in Sakkaya Ditti. To become a Sotapanna, that is one of the fetters that have to be eradicated. Sakkaya Ditti, Vichikicca, and Silabbata Paramasa. These three are the three fetters that are uprooted once and for all, and you will never get it back in samsara. Then from there on, your task is to eradicate the remaining 7 fetters. You don't need to know the fetters by name. All you need to know is anicca, dukkha and anatta. The rest is just the Dhamma, that's all. Knowledge in the Dhamma, that's all. But once you actually realize, and once you really understand, and you thoroughly understand, if you are 100% convinced that it cannot be C-I, or rather, it cannot be I see. It has to be see and then I. And then this sense of I is not really an I as an entity per se. It's actually a sense of self. It's a creation of the mind. I don't exist. Which is what we talked about last week. Right? We had the karma that came to fruition as vipaka in the right environment. If that is what's going on, this is a cyclical process. And whenever the mind creates, this is your chitta, whenever the mind does this, which is hijacking it with the sense of I, the sense of self, that is the karma, ladies and gentlemen. So when that karma takes place, now the energy that was generated to produce this chitta is recharged back into karma. I'm keeping it very simple for now. It's just a lot of scribbles on the board. How can you make sense of this anyway? Your karma? Why am I drawing it like that? That's just a representation, that's all. How do you want it? Boxes? Triangles? It doesn't matter how we draw it. It's just a representation of your karma. Okay? This is karmic energy. This is not really where the karma happens. This is just karmic energy awaiting the right environment to take fruition. Okay? It's like the money in your bank waiting for you to make a withdrawal. It's there. But it doesn't just spew out of the cash machine until you put your card and enter your PIN. That's what's here. When you earn your money, that's you depositing money in the bank. So really, karma happens here. This is earning karma. This is the karmic energy that has been earned. So you earn money, saved money. Make sense? Earning money, saving money, and then what we do best? Huh? What money? Spending. So you earn karma, you save karma, and you spend karma. There's only one word that's wrong in this sentence. I'll say it again, you try and catch the wrong word. So you earn karma, you save karma, and you spend karma. What's the wrong word? You. Yes. So this, in this active sense, it's all wrong. Although Microsoft Word will keep prompting you to change passive sentences to active sentences, in reality, that's not how the world works. Everything is passive because there's no doer. So let's say it how it really is. Karma being earned, karma being saved, and karma being spent. But how do we perceive it? I am earning karma, I am saving karma, and I am spending karma. Now that's not what's really going on. But still you sense it that way. When it comes to fruition, we call it vipaka. You might wonder why it's called vipaka. Vipaka simply means sterile. Sterile. If you want pups, there's no point in getting a sterile dog. Make sense? Yeah, sterile. Unable to produce is what vipaka means. The meaning of vipaka is inability to produce. So you wonder, well, hang on a second, how can you say it's inability to produce because it's producing? No, it's not the vipaka that's producing. It's not vipaka that's producing. This is spending. What some people do is investing. Spending money doesn't earn you money, does it? But what about investing money? That earns, right? An arahant spends. You invest. See, when we're talking money, everybody understands. Let's go back to the first sermon. We should have picked money as the topic. Everyone understands that. Eyes wide open. Everyone's awake. Hey. Earning money, saving money, spending money. So money is spent anyway, but here's what not so smart people do. In the financial world, smart people invest, but in the real world, not so smart people, they invest. The wise people, they just spend. Upside down everything, isn't it? But what would a good economics book teach you to do? A good financial education book teach you to do? Invest. What does a good Dhamma book teach you to do? Spend. Don't invest. When you do punya karma, that is investing. That's the difference. Punya karma, you drew it up here, wrote it up here earlier. Punya karma and papa karma, these are all investments. Kusala karma is not an investment. In fact, with an arahatun vahanse, he's not doing kusala karma either. Because the mind no longer needs cleansing, because it's a clean mind. So therefore, what happens there is not karma, it's called kriya. Actions. We do karma. For an arahant, it's just actions. Karmas give you vipaka. They generate vipaka. Actions don't generate vipaka. Actions are simply executed by the power of vipaka. That's all. There's no regeneration. Regeneration is what keeps this cycle going. This is the cycle of vatsara, sansara. Here you go. The cycle of sansara. You reap and you sow. And you reap. So you sow and you reap. You sow and you reap. You sow and you reap. This is sansara. Here's what the arahant does. He has stopped sowing. He just reaps. He keeps on reaping. So if he could live long enough, there's going to be a day where all his karmic energy would expire. Or rather be exhausted. If an arahant could live so long, there would be a day where all his karmic energy would be exhausted. But such a thing normally doesn't happen because these bodies break before that. Perhaps, maybe there are arahants in... No, still. In every existence, there's a maximum lifespan. Whether you talk about the human world, the rupa worlds or the arupa worlds, right? There's always a maximum lifespan. But because vipakas are in abundance, there's an infinite amount of vipakas from all the karma that we've done in the past. In fact, the other day, I was thinking about it and I thought I should share this with you. Our Buddha lived until the age of 80. There have been other dispensations or sasanas in the past where Buddhas have lived for 80,000 years. So the books say. Don't ask me to prove it. The books say. 20,000 years. 80,000 years and so on. You know for a fact that after becoming a Buddha, he committed no karma, right? Yeah? After becoming a Buddha, he committed no karma. So there was enough vipaka at least to live 80,000 years. Yeah? So if our Buddha chose to live on, this is only a hypothesis. If our Buddha chose to live on, he would still be alive. Because there's plenty of vipaka that we can keep drawing on to continue our existence. But fortunately, every existence has a physical limitation. Because it requires world, you know, the world requires, it pumps some energy, right? So energy once brought together has to disperse. Because there's always chaos. Right? So what you bring together always has to disperse. So at such point, now the environment is no longer conducive for those vipakas to be drawn. And so therefore, this process breaks. It is terminated. I'm not going to go into that detail, sir, today, okay? Good question. But if I start talking to that, we'll take a sidetrack. But great question. The gentleman is asking about Janaka Karma. Then I'll explain to you what Janaka Karma is and what all the other types of karma. A little bit enough every week. We are here for Nibbana, not for the Dhamma. But I know this is all very interesting. So this is what I say to keep you awake. I'm just jesting. But do you understand, you know, actually it's not. Do you understand that all of this is to prove to you the single point, the unitary point, the singular point that I can't say you are just a process. Can I say you are just a process? No. What can I say? It is all just a process. The very creation of a sense of self is also a process. As I drew it on the board earlier, ignorance and attachment, this is the process. This has to run on a bed of chitta. You have to give the chitta first, because that is the environment. Remember, we have causes and we have conditions and we have effects, right? Yes? Last week we talked about this. Causes, conditions, and effects. The effect being the sense of self, what are the causes? Come on. Once again. For there to be an effect, you need causes and conditions. Yeah? For the effect to be the sense of self, or for the sense of self to be the effect in this equation, what are the causes? Ignorance and attachment. What are the conditions? Achitta. 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 Because, yes, of course, it is ignorance and attachment which create attachment, which create dukkha or jati or the sense of self. But ignorance and attachment can't work unless there's a chitta. Once again proving the point. I see or CI? CI. So here's your karma sthan. As I said, right now you're saying, I am sitting. Although that is what you say, take a moment to reflect on what you've learned today over the course of the next week. And remind yourself, no, wait a second, it can't be I am sitting. Sitting, I am. Sitting, I am. So now you're going to get back into your cars and then you're going to drive back home. So then what are you going to feel? I am driving. That's what you're going to feel. But if you want to contemplate on what you've learned today, which is the, remember, knowledge plus intelligence equals wisdom. This is the application part. That's what you need to do when you're not here. I give you knowledge. Knowledge is the Dhamma and the way you apply the Dhamma, but your application of it, I can't do on your behalf. So for wisdom to happen, do you think I can do it alone? Do you think I can give you wisdom? Can I transfer wisdom to you? I can't do that. Even if I had wisdom, could I transfer it to you? If I had a bit extra, can I give you some of that? No, I can't. Because that has to arise within you. Mustn't it? Your wisdom has to arise within you. What I'm doing right now is giving you the conditions. You have the causes. Your merits are your causes. I'm simply creating an environment for that to happen. And then wisdom will arise one day. Susuta labhate panya. Alavaka asked the Buddha, How does one gain prajna? And the Buddha said, associate with noble ones. Listen to the Dhamma and wisdom will arise. Tada! What the Buddha said in Pali, today I speak to you in English. Associate with noble ones. Listen to the Dhamma and wisdom will arise within you. Noble ones can't give you wisdom. It has to arise within you. They can only give you knowledge. This is knowledge transfer, not wisdom transfer. I can't transfer my application to you either. It has to happen with you, and therefore wisdom will arise within you. When you go to the gym, can the instructor pump your muscles up for you? No, all they can do is they can show you how to use the equipment. They can show you how to do the weights. Yeah, they can show you how to do the push-ups. They can show you how to do the pull-ups, how to do the bars, how to do the belts. They can show you how to do that. You're going to have to do it yourself. And then you will be all buffed up. That's what you do here in this asana as well. So buff yourselves up. I can't do it on your behalf. I can only teach you what you need to do. Does that make sense then? So, can you try this karmasthana? Don't undermine this. Don't you think, well, the karmasthana must be long, it must be lengthy, it must rhyme. No, there is no such thing. It needn't rhyme. It needn't be in Pali. Okay? It needn't be lengthy. It needn't be any of those things. Karmasthana is simply something that you have understood. Okay? You represent it with some device. By device, I don't mean physical device. A device. It can even be a word. It can be that could be a karmasthana. Whatever reminds you, whatever brings to your consciousness the gravity, the profoundness of what you have learned, that is your karmasthana. Karmasthana, when you put into practice, I love the word karmasthana because what it does is karma asthana. This is karma. Sthana is place. Sthana, place. Think of the verb place. What's the opposite of that? Displace. Yeah? So, what is to displace karma? What is to displace karma? Karma? Karma sthana. Kusala karma. So whenever you are doing a kusala karma, that is you practicing a karmasthana. Aren't you glad that this sermon is in English? Otherwise we won't be able to put this online. They'll shoot us. You don't have a cycle anymore. At the point, ignorance is terminated. I mean, this is why, that's where we are trying to break this chain. Right? Because that is the link that the Buddha taught us how to break. See, the Buddha, in all his wisdom, that's why we love him, and we love him, and we love him, and we love him. We love the Buddha because he studied every bit of detail about this cycle, and then he, out of compassion for all of us, realized that we were so stupid that all we could do was listen to what he had to say and do it, if we were obedient enough. So he said, don't worry about the rest of it, just listen to what I have to say. Anicca, Dukkha, and Anatta. Right? He taught us that, and in doing so, he attacked our ignorance. Because, you know, this is a whole chain here. You could break this chain any way you wanted. If there was some way you could exhaust all the karma, that's also one way to attain Nibbana. Yep. I give you that. If there was some way you could sort of take out all the conditions so that, you know, no causes would manifest, that is also another way to attain Nibbana. That's another way to attain Nibbana. But are they doable? No. Well, certainly we don't know how to do any of that. But the Buddha, in all his wisdom, he discovered a way in which we mere mortal human beings can attain Nibbana, because all we needed for that was our ears. I mean, that's why he's oh, I love him. That's why he is the world's best scientist. He didn't just discover the truth. He found out how to give it to us. He is the best doctor. He didn't just discover the serum. He discovered how to give it to us in a way that was different to how he got it. I mean, that is something. He never listened to the Dhamma because there was no one to teach him. If it wasn't for him, there would never have been someone who would have said, listen to the Dhamma and attain Nibbana. Think of that for a second. If it weren't for the Buddha, no one in this world would have had the wisdom to proclaim that by listening to the Dhamma you can attain Nibbana. Because how did the Buddha attain Nibbana? Not by listening to the Dhamma. Out of sheer merits, he just contemplated. He sat under the Bodhi tree. He kept on reflecting and contemplating and analyzing and he just kept on. I don't know what he was doing down there as a Buddha. He just kept on going through the cycles of nature. Right? He did everything. Under the sun, anything that could be done, he did it. He starved himself. He held his breath on the water. All this he thought would give him freedom. He stood on one leg. Not for 10 minutes, for weeks, until his body could not hold him upright. All that he did, trying to discover how can we attain Nibbana. He didn't know what Nibbana was, but he was looking for freedom. He knew he suffered, and he just wanted a way out of suffering. But not just for himself, but for everyone. But upon attaining Buddhahood, he is bestowed for our merits, he is bestowed with this knowledge called omniscience. Therefore he knows that for mere individuals like you and I to attain Nibbana, it can also be done by listening to the Dhamma. So therefore, he showed us how to free the mind of attachment by breaking the bond here. Ignorance and attachment gives rise to the sense of self. If you break it there, the point at which karma is generated stops. That's where the investment happens. If you stop your investing, then there is no saving. No interest is earned on money you don't invest, right? But what about the interest you've already earned on money previously invested? That's there. But he said, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that, because nature will take its course. Your bodies will break down, and then at that point, you needn't worry. But until then, you'll have to suffer, or you'll also be able to enjoy comforts of the good things you've done and suffer for the bad things you've done. But that's very short-lived, so you needn't worry about that. As long as you've stopped the karma generation process, you're free. That's the Buddha. I'm beginning to think that you are beginning to understand the Buddha in a new light. Aren't you beginning to see the Buddha in a light that you'd never seen him before? Beyond the physical human being that he was? So was it wrong that when he was asked, "Sir, are you a human?" he said, "No." "Are you a Deva?" "No." "Are you a Brahma?" "No." "What are you?" "I am the Buddha." That makes sense now, doesn't it? He's not human because he doesn't have humanness about him. Humanness is another iteration of this cycle. Deva is another iteration of the cycle. It's just another version of it. Brahma is just another version of the cycle. But Buddha is ceasing this cycle. That's why it's called Buddha. This is to eradicate bhava. The eradication of bhava is called Buddha. Bhava is a generation of karmic energy. Don't you feel blessed? Aren't you glad that your parents fed you, sheltered you, kept you safe until you were ready to listen to the Dhamma? If your mother had given you up at the hospital, if your mother had aborted you, just think about it. If your mother had aborted you, if your father had disowned you, If they hadn't been there to shelter you, love you, take care of you, bring you up, if your teachers hadn't been there to teach you everything you know today so that you can understand what I'm trying to explain to you, is it not thanks to your English teacher you're here today? The teacher who taught you the alphabet? She doesn't know this, but she taught you the alphabet. She only knows how to teach the alphabet. But that's where we started. These are our roots. Any good tree must also give shelter to its roots, as all good trees do. Have you ever seen a tree that doesn't give shelter to its roots? No. The stronger the roots, the taller the tree, the wider its branches, and therefore the greater the area that it gives shelter. And the roots get shelter as well. Think about the milkman who brought you your milk every day. Think about the barber who smartened you up so you could go to school. Think about the tailor who prepared your uniform for you. Think about your teachers. Think about the people who paved the roads, and the people who light the street lamps, and the bus driver. Think about the gentleman who drove you to school every day. He was a bus driver, the school bus. Think about the gentleman who worked in the canteen. Canteen uncle? See, these were the people who kept you safe, who created an environment long enough for you to grow, for you to mature. For them, it was like you were a project. Doesn't it seem that way? You were a project. It takes a whole village to raise a child. And that's what the people who lived around you, the people who lived with you and lives with you to this day do. They protect you, they keep you safe long enough so that you can understand the Dhamma. That's why I said earlier, some people live long, but they don't live long enough. Others don't live very long, but they live long enough. Your families, they kept you alive, they kept you safe, so you could live long enough. Every time you went to the doctor, with your ailments, with your complaints, they treated you, they examined you. The nurses, they looked after you. How can we ever forget what everyone who've come into our lives have done for us? Today, aren't you even grateful to my teachers? Not just my Dhamma teacher, but the teacher who taught me the alphabet? The teacher who taught me to count? The teacher who taught me to write? So I could draw this on the board for you? Otherwise, how would you understand this? This is such an abstract concept. Don't you see how everyone's so connected to each other? That's why alone we are nothing. We are no one. It is only when we are at the mercy of the goodness and the greatness and the gentleness and the kindness that other people show us, when we are at the mercy of their compassion, do great miracles start to happen within us. And that is why when we climb up those rungs of the ladder, it is our duty and our obligation to look down, to look back, and pay our debts. And help them up. And give them back the love that they have given us. Treat them lovingly and tenderly, like they have treated us. Although you may not remember. That's why I keep on saying from time to time. Among you, are mothers and fathers to me. This is me going back to my roots and repaying those debts. I want you to do the same. If you have a teacher who was so kind to you, who was there for you when you were being mischievous, when you were just on the verge of getting kicked out of school, there might have been a teacher who stepped forward and said, I'll look after him. I know he's naughty, but let me have a go. And they kept you in. And then they took you under their wings. They put up with you. Today she may be 65, 75, maybe going 80. If you can give her something worthwhile. Because if it weren't for her, you wouldn't be in this room today. If not for the milkman, you wouldn't be in this room today. If not for your Montessori teachers, if not for your primary school teachers, if not for your secondary school teachers, if not for your university teachers, if not for your mentors, you wouldn't be in this room here today. If not for your friends who were there to guide you when you were going to do something silly, stupid, and said, oh, it's stupid, don't do that. Sometimes you might have even fallen out with them because they didn't let you do what you wanted to do. But later on you realize, thankfully, that kept me alive. Today you may not even know where they are. Think about the friend who bailed you out. When things really started taking a turn for the worse. Perhaps there are among you, or maybe someone listening to online, who was even considering offing with themselves, but someone was there to stop them and said, hey man, think about what you're about to do. Life is more worth than this. There's more meaning to life than this. One day you will discover that. Hang in there. Take my word for it. I've got bigger problems. Why do you think it's fair enough to go and jump off a bridge when I've got bigger problems than that? That inspired within you a sense of modesty and a sense of reality kicked in. And that day he saved your life. Maybe that was your father whose life was saved. Maybe your grandfather whose life was saved. And thanks to that man who saved your grandfather's life, today you're alive. If we start digging our roots, ladies and gentlemen, we can keep digging till we get to the other end of the world. But we would not come to an end. There are so many people, so many people, thanks to whose mercy, thanks to whose compassion, kindness and gentleness, and charity and generosity, that we are here today. They saved you, they prepared you, they groomed you, so that today you could listen to this. Now as you turn your head back, look at the long line of people. Some of them old, some of them weak, some of them in bed. It's now your turn to serve them. If you want to be happy, help others be happy. If you want to get to Nibbana, then help others get to Nibbana. What you give is what you get. Always. So here's your karmasthana for the week. As you drive back home, ask yourself what you're doing. And the answer will come to mind. I am driving. No. Driving I am. Then if you stop by and go to the shop, walk into the shop. Now you're walking down the aisles. You're browsing. I'm browsing. No. Browsing I am. Then you take your stuff and put it in your trolley And you push the trolley. I am pushing the trolley. No. Pushing the trolley, I am. You go to the counter, and you now it's time to pay. Take out your wallet and you start to put your card out. Paying. I am paying? No, paying, I am. And then you say thank you. Do you say thank you to the clerk? Do you? You don't need to say thank you, do you? Huh? I mean, they're doing it for the money anyway. It's their job, right? You don't need to say thank you to them, should you? Because that's nothing to do with Nibbana, right? Oh, it's got everything to do with Nibbana. You buy your vegetables, you pay with that, you pay money for that. For the money, they give you vegetables. If you want Nibbana, before you walk out the store, give them Nibbana. They may not be prepared for the Dhamma, but give them happiness and you will get happiness. Give them happiness with a smile. So always say thank you. This was used to be a habit of mine. Whenever I'd walk into a store, if I saw someone with their name badge, I loved it when people wore their name badges. And if they did something, even the simplest of things, like showing me to an aisle or fetching something for me, I'd always read their name and say, thank you. Thank you, John. That was very kind of you. You should see their faces light up like a light bulb. Because what they're looking for is recognition. They just want someone to be grateful to them. That's all. And then they're happy. As I've given them happiness, what do I get back? What does it look like I've gotten back? Every flight I've taken in my life, I've lost count now. I think it's at least almost 100 flights at the very least. Every flight I took, I always wrote a letter of compliments to the staff who worked, the people who were risking their lives to make sure that I got to my job on time. So that I could be with my family, they sacrificed being with their family. So that I could be with my family on New Year's Day, they sacrificed their time. One could say they did it for the money, but then they didn't smile for the money. They didn't have to be so kind to me. They could have been a job's worth just to tick the box, but they weren't like that. Whenever you see service with a smile, return that smile. These are the makings of an arahant, I tell you. These are the foundations. That's why I said, finally, one last time, this is a holistic approach to Nibbana. This is the whole package. Maybe it'll take us a little bit longer to get to Nibbana. Perhaps. But this way, you will most assuredly get there. That I can promise. Whereas if you just keep on focusing on the Dhamma, Dhamma and more Dhamma, and you don't focus on the Shraddha elements, you don't focus about how good a person you are to others, how you bounce off each other, and what impact you have on other people's lives, and if all you're focused on is the Dhamma, then you become very selfish. Because the Dhamma doesn't stick. That's what happens. The Dhamma doesn't stick. I've seen many people like that in my life. That's why I'm sharing this with you. The Dhamma won't stick. For the Dhamma to stick, you need to have good, fertile soil. The seed will do the Dhamma. It will do the rest, but you need fertile soil. That fertile ground is your humanity, is your humbleness, is your kindness, your gentleness, your generosity. It's your charity. It's that smile that you put on another person's face. Therefore, these two things must go hand in hand. Does that make sense? Of course, it must. Because you're intelligent. You understand what I mean. Because you have the merits for that. Right? Let's wrap it up for the day then. So you have a karmasthana. There's some homework to do. Okay? Practice it. And then you will reap the benefits of that by this time next week. Okay. Let us all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by inviting the Swami Mahansa to deliver the sermon, attending the sermon, listening to the sermon, and creating a conducive environment for as many people as possible to come along, sit down comfortably, and practice the path. as well as creating a conducive environment for those who have joined us online to listen to these talks. So first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in presence of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Let us be grateful to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us transfer this message to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, as well as the Mahanayakas, the Anunayakas, as well as all the other monks resident in all the temples and monasteries throughout the world. Let us also transfer this message to Guru Swami Mahansi, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also transfer this message to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer this message to friends of the monastery, our devotees who, for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who extend their well know-how and their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, husbands, wives, and various other relations of ours, as well as those who have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in any way, shape, or form. Let us transfer this message to our teachers, our employers and our employees, and everyone and anyone who have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in this long and long journey of samsara. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they also be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmanas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the Nimas gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. May these merits help them to prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives, our forefathers, our ancestors, those who have passed away in our names, reminding ourselves that in this long journey they have supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. It is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer these merits to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives for the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. Let us also transfer these merits to those who lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends to us, acquaintances to us. They will have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape and form possible and available to them. And therefore, out of gratitude, let us transfer all the merits we have acquired to all of them. May they rejoice in these merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day and throughout our journey of samsara, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land, and may you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Mahanse or an Arahat Perinin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha himself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midatnva, desha ginnen midatnva, moha ginnen midatnva,
සුඛයන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්මා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්මා මමද සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා රාග ගිනි නිවේවා ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා මෝහ ගිනි නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුනුරුවන්ගේ සූසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බෙලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගතතර වෙත්වා.